This is the April 6th edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Logan Kimmel of Roach Ag Marketing. He's in Naperville, Illinois. Chip Nellinger is here from Blue Reef Agri Marketing out of Morton, Illinois. And Brian Split joins us from agmarket.net. He's in Barrington, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. You may find and listen to the program anytime you'd like at willag.org or search it out in your favorite podcast application. Brian Split has joined us at willag.org a couple of times over the last couple of years, but this is the first time he's joined us on our Commodity Week program. Thank you for being part of the panel for the day, Brian. Can you start by giving me a little background on yourself and how you came into the business?
Yeah, sure. That's probably going to be the least important part of our conversation today, but I've been in commodity brokerage since 2007, so 16 years. And prior to that, I served in the Marine Corps with 1st Marine Division. And just a quick anecdote, April 3rd of 2003, so that was 20 years and 3 days ago, was the day I was medevaced from Iraq. So I just had my 20-year anniversary of my alive day, which is pretty wild to say.
Well, thank you so much, Brian, for your service. We appreciate that and all that you and all your brothers in arms have done for democracy across the planet and certainly for the United States. Now, let's get a couple of things from you to begin with. What items would you like to talk about related to the marketplace today?
You know, I think first and foremost, one thing that we want to address is maybe some of the expectations that a lot of participants in the marketplace had after the report last week, especially after the surprise production cut from OPEC, and then what the actual price action through the course of the week is telling us. I think maybe we should look at what some of the expectations would be on some of the spreads that we're looking at. There's been a lot of talk about May, July spreads in corn and soybeans, and some of the other spreads that we are internally looking at. And maybe some of the chart activity that we're seeing. I think there's a very well-defined pattern on the December corn chart that if you're looking at that and you're following what that chart is suggesting, it's something that should really concern producers that do not have protection on corn values moving forward.
Logan Kimmel of Roach Ag Marketing, what's on your list for the things we should discuss for the day?
Yeah, I think if you look at how we started the week, Sunday night with the outside markets and the OPEC cut, and as Brian alluded to, the price action that we've had, especially after this 10-day forecast has opened up, and what the futures price have done, assuming the planting now ramps up into the next 2 weeks, I think that's starting to change the marketplace as opposed to a week ago when a lot of areas were getting heavy snow. And how does that, how can we manage the risk and look at these new crop values going forward here as the planters get rolling?
And Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing from your list.
Yeah, Todd, I think a couple things. I think continuing these outside markets, and, you know, some of the financial markets and crude oil, I think that production cut from OPEC could be important. And I shudder to even say this. Usually I don't like talking about wheat. I just have a sneaking suspicion that wheat is going to be a heavy, heavy influence to the corn market here in coming weeks and months ahead. So I think wheat needs to be in the discussion as well.
We will certainly take wheat up, though I do want to come back to the one thing that all three of you mentioned. And on Sunday evening into Monday, it certainly was a positive when OPEC decided, the Saudis at least, announced that they were going to cut their production by 500,000 barrels a day or something like that. Did that feeling about what this meant to the marketplace change during the week, Brian Split? I'm not sure how you're seeing it as it relates to commodities?
So I think when I look at the actions taken by OPEC and how the market handled it, it priced it in immediately on the opening Sunday night. And I'm looking at the June crude oil contract, for example, that has the highest open interest. And we had opened Sunday night at 80.60. And as we're talking right now, futures are trading at 80.50. So we priced it in immediately, the ramifications of that production cut. And then from that point forward, really, the market didn't know what to do with it. I think the market realized that, hey, crude oil is now back up to $80, which by and large has been resistance for the last 6 months. We have a monstrous gap below us on the chart. And I think some of the market participants that may still be bullish are afraid to continue to come in here and buy, knowing that we could break $5 just to go back down and fill that gap. So it was a repricing event that happened very quickly, and not much has happened after the opening Sunday night.
Logan and Chip, I'll have you follow up on this, and we'll start with Logan. Your thought process as it relates to the OPEC cuts.
Yeah, I think that's something to watch on the chart, especially with the massive gap. We did briefly see the RBOB and heating oil prices come down midweek relative to that gap, but not as much as the crude. It does bring concern to the marketplaces if that gap does get filled, and we do see a sell-off in the crude prices. While it did not happen this week, you still saw a decline in the grains. What if we do see a decline of $5 to $10 in the crude price? I'd have to be a little concerned on what that means for the grain markets if that were to happen.
Yeah, I think Brian did a good job of kind of laying out the definition of what to look for here. I was a little impressed that the market, given the big gap up on the Sunday night trade, especially, kind of ahead of this long weekend, a lot lighter volume going into Good Friday and the Easter weekend, that the crude oil market held those gains really impressively, in my opinion. I do think that, you could see some back and fill in that gap. I think it's important that the market holds, maybe the upper half of that gap if it wants to kind of continue to be in a newly defined uptrend. But I do think that, up towards $83, $83.50, some of the previous highs from back early in the year are going to be important. If you get through there and it's in short order within the next 2 or 3 weeks, something probably is going better in the economy. There's maybe some better optimism about a soft landing or something like that. And that could become very, very friendly. And I don't think the markets, at least the financial market, the oil market, is set up for that necessarily. So, it's certainly going to be a direct influence to corn and soybeans from the, biodiesel standpoint, as well as ethanol. And I think it is a fresh dynamic that obviously wasn't there a week ago.
And Brian, I'll come back to you because I think you have a different take on which direction crude oil might be prone to go.
I think right now, just looking at the risk reward right now, based on where we've been over the last 6 months, we're much closer to resistance than we are support. That doesn't mean that we can't get through that resistance, but I think what Chip had alluded to is we're going to need some other input to get us through those price points that we've failed at over the last 6 months. Now, I think the dynamics of what the OPEC actually did is they said, hey, you had asked us previously to increase production to help with inflation. And we didn't do that. You got inflation under control by other means, raising interest rates. But what you did tell us is that you were going to replenish your strategic reserves that you've been depleting rather aggressively if futures got below $70. And we got well below 70 into the low to mid 60s. And then he decided, no, we're not going to replenish these reserves. So effectively what OPEC did is they said, okay, this is what you need to buy to replenish your reserves. We're going to take that amount off the marketplace because you decided not to do it yourself. And so they took control of prices and caused that price event themselves. But like we said with Chip, the market is going to need some more fundamental input in order to aggressively take those highs out. And if it does, then we're going to potentially look at retesting some of the levels that we had maybe in fall, where we were trading into the the low to mid 90s. But I would expect that if we can't get through the low 80s here first, we're likely to revisit the low 70s again. And part of the problem too for OPEC is they're concerned about demand. And so, you're not going to cut production like that if you have concerns, unless you have concerns about demand moving forward.
Well, I've got another couple of questions on this, and I want to stay with you. Are you all feeling that economies around the planet are in good shape, okay shape, just about to go off the edge shape? Is this where the marketplace has its trepidation as it relates to what happened last week with crude oil? And I guess maybe I'll start with you, Chip, and then Logan, and followed up by Brian on that one.
Yeah, I would say maybe a touch less than okay, but not over the cliff yet. If we're not careful, we could maybe hit the accelerator over the edge. I think there's a lot of nervousness out there. But, you know, we're dealing with futures markets as well. We've had, a big sell-off previously here in the stock market. As Brian mentioned, we spent some time under 70 in crude oil. Not so sure that at least some of that hasn't been priced in to these outside markets. Time will tell on that. But certainly is not a great situation with what's happened, with inflation and the banking crisis and, everything that goes along with that. I'd say that we're a little bit less than okay right now, but maybe not quite over the edge.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And Chip brought up a great point. That was a brief market influencer in the banking crisis. And I think that adds to the fear and the worry. And I think another item to just consider and look at that is the U.S. dollar still coming down, but relative to where it was here back at the end of last year or last fall, that's come down as well. And how does that play into effect with our commodities and our prices here? I think there's just a lot of moving parts all over.
We keep kind of referencing this banking crisis, and that all really stems from the swift movements in interest rates. And, there's definitely some parallels to what we saw in 2008. The first sign of that financial crisis really happened early in 2008, and it wasn't until the later part of the year where we had Lehman Brothers, go under, and that really was the straw that broke the camel's back. But you had early signs of it really in February and March of 2008. So you just wonder, timing-wise, if maybe this is foreshadowing of things still yet to come down the road. I've always heard the saying that where there's one cockroach, there's bound to be more. And I'm not confident that this was just a very brief, 1 week event where we're not going to have any of these potential systemic risks creep back into the marketplace, 5-6 months down the road.
Thank you for bearing with me on this. I think it lays a good fundamental underlie for our conversations probably for the next 7 to 8 months, maybe longer than that. Now let's come back to something a little closer to home and at hand. The 10-day forecast, as you mentioned, Logan Kimmel, is opening up. Planting progress probably will move pretty quickly. How concerned are you as to how it might change the marketplace for corn?
Well, I think we saw in some areas, especially in the Dakotas, that had well north of 20 plus inches of snow start to show up in the 10-day forecast now of a 50 degree in snowpack areas, and not to mention here in Illinois and in Iowa. In the Corn Belt with very warm temperatures that might not have been in place here a week back. So I do think you'll see a fairly large jump in planting here in the next 10 days. And I think that's what we saw attribute to some of the losses here in the commodity prices here in the last 2 days, especially from when that forecast flipped.
Chip, the futures do exactly what they say they are. They're futures. Have they already looked into this and said, well, we're going to have planters rolling. We'll take some out of the price of corn and soybeans over this next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think the market maybe here at the close Thursday did, you know, a big part of pricing this better forecast in. Yeah, you know, again, depends on the speed of planting progress. You know, Logan mentioned, you know, the key is going to be, in my mind, the Dakotas, Minnesota. You know, it's well publicized, the weather they've been struggling with. How fast can they get in there? How many prevent plant acres are they going to have up there? I mean, there's always prevent plant acres, it seems like, every year. I think it's a matter of how many, not if they're going to be prevent plant in that area. And so, you know, again, I think that the market probably did a good job of pricing that forecast in with a long weekend here and no markets on Good Friday, you know, kind of added to the negativity and the sell-off and profit-taking. So I think maybe that forecast out a week, 10 days, is pretty well digested, especially in the corn market right now.
You wanted to talk a little bit, Brian, about the spread expectations and what that might mean. Can you tell me about the inverses you see and what you think those spreads do mean?
Yeah, so I think one of the spreads that has been well publicized this week is the spread between May and July, and that's for both corn and soybeans. So at the end of the day today, you have May corn settled 23¾ cents above the July contract, and you had the May soybean contract settle 30 cents above July. So these are inverses that we would generally see in years with tight stocks and tight stocks to use ratios. Again, I would point towards 2013 as a pretty good guideline of what we may continue to expect out of these spreads. And so the spreads have a job to do, because I think what we saw is with the forecast opening up with the expectation of some pretty aggressive planting to be done over the next couple of weeks. Generally, when that is happening, the producer is less likely to be delivering physical grain. So the market has tools to use. One of them is the spread. So the spread is saying, hey, we are going to penalize you by storing your grain down the road. We're going to give you a premium right now. And if you want to store it till July, that's fine, but it's going to be at a discount. And that is also something that is going to be seen, that it's expressed through the basis. So I think right now we're at a period of time where, because of the tight stocks, because of a more aggressive planting pace, we could expect these May, July spreads to continue to trade strong. And I think you're probably going to see them back off a little bit here in the short term. But then I wouldn't be surprised to see them make a run going into delivery as we get to the end of the month. Now, another spread that we're watching internally, and we do quite a bit of work with John Stewart & Associates, which is kind of our commercial counterpart. So they work directly with the ethanol plant, the elevator, the food processor, what have you. They believe that we would see potentially the July contract trade a dollar plus over September. So and I think another thing that's important for the producer to be mindful of is when your elevator changes their cash bid, and I know a lot of them have already moved off of the May contract to July, your basis may have just improved by 25 cents, which is roughly the difference between May and the July contract for corn, and maybe 30 cents, but your cash price is the same. So don't get bullish because your basis just took a big leap, because now that basis took a leap because it's now priced off of a contract that's trading at a discount to the spot month.
So this is all about managing risk, as you suggested earlier on, Logan Kimmel. How do producers look at this to manage risk? We'll start with old crop, and if you want to do new crop, you can too.
Well, great points on the spreads and the concept of when busy in the field, not a lot of old crop getting moved. And the question, you know, also to consider too, with the recent exports picking up, and this week we're pretty good on the corn. I do think that old crop spread stays strong over the next contract or even the new crop. But when you do get pushes and rallies on the old crop, corn and beans, I think it's important to consider what you have inventory left on hand and hedging that off in the form of, you know, making some sales or at least getting some protection, because they're still historically old crop corn at good levels. It's good to see the spreads stay intact, but be mindful of when you get rallied. I do think it's a wise decision to take advantage of that and sell into it.
Chip, I don't know whether you did this or not, but I'm going to guess that probably this was the case. After the grain stocks numbers came out and everybody took a look at the on-farm storage for both corn and soybeans, I suppose you asked producers to move this sooner rather than later. Are they following broadly that kind of analysis and taking advantage of it, or are they bringing their planters out and getting ready to go to the field?
Yeah, I think a combination. First of all, I don't think that there's a ton of old beans left out there. And you know, I think that's going to be part of the key that drives these spreads that we have been talking about in here. So, you know, again, I think farmer movement, if they've held old crop to this point, in my mind, they're betting on summer weather anyway. Now, I wouldn't tell you that we don't, as a rule, have a little bit of old crop corn left. It's 15-20%. It's kind of gambling stocks, waiting to see, you know, if we have a normal summer type high in early June, kind of betting on the weather and some sort of a scare along the way. But in general, you know, as evidenced by the stocks report from the USDA, tighter than expected. Part of the reason is there's not as much old crop corn and especially old crop beans out there as we normally have. It's going to get really interesting. When I first came into this market and was taught by some Board of Trade members, they were focused on the spreads. And to the previous comments, if we're going to continue to see the bull spreads work, I think that's supportive. It doesn't mean we won't have some days like today where we go lower. But I think in general, until we get the corner turned from old crop to new crop, that transition early fall, I think there's going to be good support on the breaks. And the stock situation could be something that really gives us support down the road here, especially when farmers get busy in the fields with planting, spraying. That is typically when you get some really strong basis pushes and those bull spreads really working.
Brian Split, you are a technician. What are the charts telling you today?
You know, I think my main concern right now would be the December corn contract. And I think it's a little bit too early in the growing season to validate this and break down below support. But this December corn contract has what we would call a descending triangle. And again, I don't make the rules for technical analysis. I just try to follow them. But, you know, we've had this downtrend in place since we made contract highs last spring. We've got a very, very strong base of support below the market at 540. So we had a major low that was made the day after Russia invaded Ukraine. That was at 540. From that low, we went up and made our contract highs. And we came down in July, coming out of 4th of July weekend. We had a 542 and three quarter low. We bounced late July, 543 and a quarter low. The lows that we made in March, about a week prior to the stocks and acreage report, would be at the trend line from all of those lows. So what you're supposed to do with this type of a formation is you take the measurement from the contract high, which is 679 and a quarter, and then you measure the distance to that 540 base of support. And then eventually, if we do break down below 540, the technical objective of that pattern would be $4.75. And it's kind of wild to be talking about $4 corn, but again, I will reference 2013. We were sitting at roughly the same price at the same time of year in 2013, and by fall, we were making lows at 410. And I think we have to realize that, yes, the tight old crop balance sheet is something that's going to be supportive in the short term, but if we get 91 million acres planted, if we have a relatively good growing season with relatively good yields, our balance sheet is going to change rather substantially year over year. And I think the fund manager right now, we saw because of the lack of the commitment of trade report, we really didn't know where they were for quite some time. And then we wake up one day when they start releasing the data and say, wow, the funds got from rather long to short. And that provided some support for the short term, but I think what the funds are going to do is they're going to continue to support old crop, and then they're going to build a short position in the new crop on rallies. And in my opinion, unless we have a major weather event, I think you're going to have the funds short corn as we get to late summer into fall. And so I think right now, if I'm going to be trying to be bullish. I want to try to be bullish with the remainder of my old crop stocks, and I want to be very, very aggressive, making sure I have a well-defined floor under my new crop.
Chip Nellinger, I'll come to you now for the wheat comment. A million extra acres of soft red winter wheat in the eastern part of the United States. Where do you want to go?
I shudder to say this, Todd. It seems to me like the wheat market, is shrugging off the dire situation that we see in the plains. We saw the first, crop conditions released of the spring here on Monday, and they were expected to be poor, but they were worse than expected. Only 16% of the Kansas wheat crop is good to excellent, 28% nationwide. And they're in critical need of rain. Now, we've seen the Kansas City contract, move higher against the Chicago. We've touched some historic, wide spreads there between Kansas City's premium to the Chicago. I just wonder, unless they get rain very quickly, and I'm not even sure that will help some of these fields a whole lot, that this wheat market doesn't have some rallying to do. The funds have a short position of nearly 100,000 contracts in Chicago, primarily because they've been using Chicago as their short leg of long Kansas City, short Chicago. I just think the firewood is in the fireplace right now. We just need a match to light a big short covering rally in the wheat market. I think the weather and the conditions out west would warrant that. Eventually, if we don't get some quick rain in the next 3 or 4 weeks in Kansas and Oklahoma, and I think that could spill over and become something that is supportive eventually to the corn market if that were to happen. It seems like every time corn is tried to rally, wheat holds it back. If you get, whatever the flare-up would be here domestically, slow planting, prevent plant in North Dakota on corn, whatever that is, in conjunction with the wheat market rallying, then, on top of the bull spread activity, the tight old crop stocks, you could have a story again for a short period of time, and the market could feel really bullish. So as much as I dislike the wheat market in general, I think it could be something eventually that spills over and helps support the corn market just based on an extremely poor crop that looks like it's coming out of the U.S. plains right now.
I suppose short period of time is the important statement in that, should there be a rally at this point, because you're not talking about a lengthy rally in the marketplace.
No, I think it could kind of follow along with the normal seasonal pattern that we see, which would be, a rally in the corn market into, first half of June, kind of checking out that extended forecast to make sure that there's not some heat and dryness building across the Midwest. I would think that if the funds, would get out of their short position, and that would be led by the Kansas City continuing to rally, dragging the Chicago along with it as the spread and pushing those funds out of their shorts in the Chicago wheat contract, you could easily see, a buck plus in wheat. And so I think it could come at the same time frame that could be supportive. But yeah, I'm not talking about something that's 8-9 months in length. We've seen historically these rallies are short-lived in wheat, and I just think we've played the bearish drum a long time. The funds have a big short position in wheat, and you've got some bullish sparks out there in that Kansas City market. So it could be something here over the next, say, 90 days. It could be something that really gives us a little bit of a tailwind in our corn market as well.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. Logan Kimmel at Roach Ag Marketing out of Naperville, Illinois. We'll start with you. Your final word for the day.
This week in the grains, specifically corn and beans, we saw this forecast open up, and we've seen how the market reacted after a outside market fireworks here to begin on Sunday. So I think going forward, we're going to have this volatility in the market, especially on new crop, as we get the crop planted. And as we get crop condition reports and weather events here into the summer, and I think producers need to be mindful here as we get through the growing season and we have opportunities and rallies, I think it's important to consider price levels that make sense to hedge off risk on new crop, because we've seen what just the beginning of this weather season can provide and how it can affect our futures prices.
Brian Splitt from AgMarket.net in Barrington, Illinois, your final word?
Yeah, you know, I'm going to look beyond corn and soybeans and wheat directly and just make it a point to listeners that when I look at the commodity indices, whether it's the Bloomberg Commodity Index or Reuters Commodity Index, those are also trending down and have been since last spring. And those indices have the same descending triangle formation that the December corn chart has. We've got a rising interest rate environment. The cost of money is going up. And I just think it's important for listeners to realize that, you know, that saying the trend is your friend should be nagging at the back of their head and realize what that means when you get rallies in the grain marketplace. And hopefully over the next couple of weeks and months, we can get some seasonal rallies. But I think producers need to have a plan on what they want to do with those rallies if they come to fruition.
Finally, we'll wrap up with you, Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, totally agree with Brian. We need to have a plan from a producer standpoint. Don't forget about the crop insurance decision that you just made here on the 15th of March. Gives you good floors underneath of us in the very short run here to not panic and sell anything. You know, we've got a good revenue floor there with crop insurance, but we need to have a plan, like Brian mentioned, to reward the rallies when they come. I still think you can see $5.90 to $6 December corn. I think you can see $13.80 plus November beans again. It might not be high enough in our mind to want to sell that, but I really think that's our sweet spot if we see that here between now and, say, mid to late June.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Chip Nellinger of Blue Reef Agri-Marketing out of Morton, Illinois, Brian Splitt of AgMarket.net in Barrington, Illinois, and Logan Kimmel at Roach Ag Marketing in Naperville, Illinois. Find us online, listen to us on demand at willag.org, or search us out in your favorite podcast application. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.